This is The Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, March the 25th. We will discuss the latest from Libya. We will talk about the latest news involving Governor Walker's collective bargaining law. It will remain unpublished until the state Supreme Court takes up a case challenging the process used to pass it. The Court of Appeals referred the issue to the Supreme Court yesterday. We'll also talk about the heated race for state Supreme Court justice and other top stories in the news this week during our regular Friday Week in Review. We have with us two guests, as we always do, who will debate and discuss these issues, and we welcome your input too at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What in the news this week do you want to talk about, or do you want our guests to talk about? John Sharpless joins us. He is a professor of history at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Louis Fortas joins us, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. Good morning, Louis.
Good morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with Libya. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced last night that NATO will take over the lead of military operations in Libya soon, so presumably the U.S. won't be in charge. Louis Fortas, what's your reaction to that announcement and to Libya, in the U.S. being involved in Libya in general?
Well, first of all, I think after our sitting back kind of and waiting to see what happened in Rwanda and seeing the number of people that were killed, I think when you have a person who's in power, who came to power by force, as Gaddafi did, who's stayed in power by force for the last 42 years, who's saying that they're going to go into Benghazi and they're going to go door to door and they're going to, you know, slaughter people and on and on, we wouldn't be really respectable human beings if we didn't respond to something like that. And it was, to their credit, I think it was the French who certainly took the lead. The Brits were second, and I think we were kind of third in line on this. But I think it was essential that that something be done to prevent that carnage. In terms of NATO taking over, I think one of the things that caused a little delay is the French and the Brits and the United States went through the proper process, and they went to the UN, and there were five abstentions in the Security Council, Chinese and the Russians among them, but they went through the proper channels. And then I think the next thing is to have some kind of international organization take over, and NATO was the logical one. So I think it's kind of moving along as people had planned. And I also think that the idea is to kind of take away the huge military advantage of the Gaddafi folks and let the people, similar to the people in Egypt and Tunisia, basically try to, in as peaceful a way as possible, develop a democracy.
John Sharpless.
Well, I fully support this initiative on the part of the president. I think Republicans have been awfully whiny on this. If there's any criticism of Obama, he moves slow. But I also understand why he moves slow. He's a cautious man, number one. And there were concerns. I think we were caught in a tension on this, dealing with our allies in Europe. You have to remember, this is an area of North Africa that's very much traditionally viewed by the French as an area of their sphere of influence. The French Empire, covered four nations of northern Africa for almost 100 years, and they still have very strong links with this region, although Libya was, interestingly, an Italian enclave. So we had to wait. I think I would have liked to have seen this done when the rebels were advancing, when the momentum was on their side. But the second thing Obama was worried about, and this was very important to him, was positioning our Arab allies, who, interestingly enough, are being challenged similarly in some of their regimes, positioning them at least tacitly in support. My guess is Saudi Arabia is very uncomfortable with all of this. Clearly, it's obviously it's a monarchy. A small group of elites dominate the economy and society. What they see happening across the Middle East is very troubling to them. And I'm sure they, you know, privately they ask the United States, "What would you do if we were challenged this way? Would you turn against us?" This is a very difficult thing for the United States. Having said all of that, I fully agree. This thing could have turned horribly tragic. And the United States has sat by on a number of occasions with George Bush Sr. In southern Iraq. We watched a slaughter as people revolted against Saddam Hussein and we let them die. We can go further back. In the 1950s, we encouraged the people of Eastern Europe to revolt. The Hungarians did. And then we stood by while the Russians returned and slaughtered people. Time and again, we haven't lived up to our rhetoric. And I think in this moment, we're trying to.
The rebels in Libya, I understand, are saying they are being, they're still being slaughtered, so to speak, and need more than bombing from the air. Can we do this without boots on the ground?
No. We can't put boots on the ground. The best we can do, if the French want to take the next step, let them do that. We just have to hope that the rebels, with the assistance of air power, and we're doing quite a bit to reduce the capabilities of Gaddafi's army, we have to hope that they somehow pull it together and make this work. It would be, we have done as much as we're supposed to do. Period. That's it. And the French may do more. The Italians may do more because this is sort of their area of influence. And we should certainly be supportive if they decide to do that. I suspect they won't either. We've done as much as we can do.
Yeah. And Louis Fortas, you think that the U.S. will be out of there in short order?
Yes, actually, I do. I think the French feel very strongly about this. And I think David Cameron does, too. And so I think they're very anxious to take the lead. And I think we're very anxious to step back and let them do that. But I think one thing that's going on that is bodes very well for the, quote, rebels is there's the passion there. There's the energy there. There's the commitment there. And if you look at the people on the other side, these are people being paid. And when you have paid people versus people that will, you know, die for a cause. I'll put my money on the die for the cause side anytime. And I think that all you need to do is level this playing field a little bit more, as we are doing with the airstrikes and the like. And I know there's a big question of can we provide arms and all. And I don't know how it's going to be done, but I guarantee you there's going to be some arms being getting to the rebels. And I think that this is an indigenous movement, and this is the best kind if you want democracy, because that's what it's all about. And I think we kind of level the playing field, we back off, and I would bet on with anyone that Gaddafi will say a year from now is not going to be there.
Let me play for you the responses that I received earlier this week when I talked with two of Wisconsin's congressmen, Republican Congressman Sean Duffy of the 7th Congressional District and Republican Congressman Reed Ribble of the 8th Congressional District. They both disagreed on President Obama's decision to get involved with the establishment of this no-fly zone over Libya. Let's take a listen first to Sean Duffy.
Those who are seeking freedom and democracy, especially with a broad coalition, I'm okay with where the president has gone, especially when you look at how ruthless Gaddafi has been with his people, murdering them in the street.
So that was Sean Duffy, and Congressman Reed Ribble disagreed.
I felt that that was a regional conflict and that we should have stuck. I think the French should have taken the lead, and they should have. They're the closest to it. So you had French and, France and Italy that should have played a bigger role. I wish the president had spoken to the Congress before they made the decision so he could have got feedback from the elected officials.
So what do you make of what sort of political fallout will there be over this, John Sharpless?
I don't think there's going to be much. He's been very lucky up to this point. We haven't lost any of our men and women in the war zone. That could be a difficult challenge for him if, sadly, some of our Air Force or Navy pilots were to die. We've been very lucky. The one plane that went down, both of the crewmen survived. I think setting aside some disastrous scenario, I think this will just play itself out. It could be a messy ending. We could end up with a divided Libya and with a rebel-held area that claims to be the legitimate government and Gaddafi in control of large portions of the country. And that could go on for quite some time. Again, I really like the fact that France is invested in this. I never thought I'd cheer for the French, but bless them. This is, in some ways, whatever plays out here, people might be perplexed on why the French are committed here. If you have any knowledge of the map of North Africa, right south of Libya is Chad, a country that was previously a French colony with enormous oil reserves. The French stationed troops there. Even though they're post-colonial, they're very much tied to France. It's one of the major sources of oil for France. I think they would like to see Gaddafi out of the way so that oil from Chad could move smoothly to France. This is about oil one more time. Interestingly enough, not our oil, but French oil.
In response to the question about Gaddafi and Ribble, I think Gaddafi is basically looking at America the way we were raised to look at America and sometimes forget, but when you go around the world, that's the way the rest of the world views America, is that we really still are, as much as, you know, people complain about different things we do and the Patriot Act and everything, we are still the beacon of liberty throughout the world. And I think when we come through on things like this, it what it does for our international relations is phenomenal. And I think that Mr. Ribble is I just using the Republican talking points, and I think Sean Duffy is actually taking a step back and taking the bigger picture and saying, looking at the bigger picture and saying, this is vital for our redeveloping our relationships in the Middle East. I spent the summer teaching in Beirut, and there's a lot of anger in Lebanon toward the United States for, you know, what we have done and what we've enabled some of our allies to do to them. And I think when we come through on something like this, it does wonders for people in the Middle East to say, hey, you know, the U.S. is okay and decent. And I just want to mention one thing about the French. I mean, the French have been very, very supportive of, for example, the Palestinians in the Middle East. The French have been very, very consistent on that. Much of Europe has been, too. So I'm not totally surprised to see the French taking a lead on this. And I think Sarkozy is, his popularity ratings are really, really low right now. But he's doing what he believes. He's stepping up and he's, you know, doing what he thinks is right.
You do know that Gaddafi and his son put an enormous amount of money into his election campaign.
I did not.
There was a lot of, they're not getting their money's worth right now, but they invested a lot of money in the last French election.
Let me get a couple of callers in. Pat in Milwaukee. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just have an opinion here, and that is, I think that President Obama is doing a great job being mindful and being careful to have the rest of the world, other countries in on, I'll call it, I'm a mom, so I'll say disciplining the side that's using violence. Just like the people who were protesting peacefully, they had a perfect right to protest, in my opinion, and just like in any other place. I mean, in this globe, if we turn a blind eye toward violence, terrible violence on either side, we're not being moral. Just like what would have happened in Madison if there would have been violence on one side or the other? It would have been horrible.
Pat, thank you very much. Let me move on to Steve in Baraboo for another perspective. Steve?
Well, I don't know why it seems like at a time when our country is in the worst financial shape it's ever been, we're spending billions and billions of dollars fighting everybody else's battles overseas. You know, we don't even have the money to keep our country running, and they're worried about our country shutting down. But yet every time we turn around, we can invest billions of dollars overseas. When is this nonsense going to stop? I don't believe anybody anymore who tells me this is just going to be short-lived and we're going to only be there a short time. Sounds very much familiar to Iraq and now Afghanistan and everywhere else we have troops invested. Who's going to protect us here when all of these idiots decide, oh, look, there's the United States, a nice, big, wide-open target. Let's start blowing up things and doing damage there when all of our troops are spread out everywhere else.
Well, those missiles apparently are a bazillion dollars each. John Sharpless, could we afford that?
This every time we engage in a military effort, Steve is certainly right. It taxes the American people. I think here are the facts. We are an imperial nation. We are imperial partly because of our enormously successful economy. Partly just because of luck. We came out of World War II, the only unscathed, powerful nation in the world. We've maintained that. Of course, we get challenged by China. Challengers come along. But it was, as was said just a few minutes ago, people look to the United States to resolve problems. That's just a fact. I feel it makes me feel good as an American when people look to us as the nation that brings freedom to the world. We can't always act on that. I understand it. But I like the fact that that's what our nation is about at its very best. Yes, it does cost money, and it does endanger American lives. But it seems to me there are moments when you have to act. And if you want to be practical about it, getting rid of somebody like Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi, ultimately, no matter how difficult the process that follows, makes for more stability in the world. These men are unstable. They have enormous power, and they're just frankly unstable men. They're very problematic men. So they're very troubling to the region and the success of other diplomatic efforts we're trying to engage in.
Yeah.
Let me respond to Steve's question also, and that is, I don't think we can afford not to get involved in some of these things. I think we can't go back to some kind of isolationist policies. We live in not only a world economy, but we live in a very much a shrinking world, and so we are very, very connected. And when you see, just flagrant abuses of power and basically people being slaughtered by someone who's came to power by force and all, I think we would lose so much credibility if we didn't do what we were doing, and I think we would also lose respect for ourselves as people. I think it's necessary. The other thing that Steve had mentioned is that United States is going bankrupt. We're not. This is the wealthiest country in the world. People talk about China surpassing us. Our economy is still three times the size of China's. So, we are not a nation about to go bankrupt. Maybe we should raise a few taxes here and there and balance the budget.
let me wrap up our Libya discussion as we have many state issues to get to as well. We have one caller who says, if Gaddafi is ousted in this thing, whoever takes over might be worse. Louis Fortas very briefly.
That's called democracy. I mean, that's a, you know, what you're saying is there's going to be some self-determination, and it doesn't always come out the way we want it. But if that's what people want, and it's not done by, you know, massive force and coercion, then, you know, people are going to choose who they want, and it may not be who we want, but mm-hmm. that's democracy.
And do you see that happening, John Sharpless?
We could have messy results here. I think the most likely one is that at some point this thing grinds to a draw. Unless Gaddafi is killed by an attack or his generals turn against him, I suspect he can hold out. The rebels really are not a very good army. They've been successful in very, very closed areas of the country. I suspect this will be a draw. At some point, he'll wave the flag of peace and pretend to be accommodating. And at that point, it's going to be difficult. I don't know if it'll be, I think it's great that the Europeans are vested in this. It won't be our problem to unwrap that that map that's incoherent for a while. I don't think that it's going to be a conservative religious regime. I don't see any of that in the North African revolts. It doesn't matter if you look at Egypt or Tunisia or Libya. There's very little religious rhetoric. This is a revolt that has to do with economic conditions and oppression. So I don't think we have to worry about a Taliban regime. It's going to be messy and chaotic, though.
Louis, we have to move on, and I'm way past break time, and we don't have enough time for all the other state issues. So let's leave it there for now, and we will talk in just a moment about the a state appeals court yesterday sending Wisconsin's new collective bargaining law directly to the state Supreme Court. And we will welcome your thoughts on that and some other state issues. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our two guests this week for the Week in Review are John Sharpless, a professor of history at UW-Madison, and Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock, it's the We the People Wisconsin State Supreme Court debate between candidates David Prosser and Joanne Kloppenburg. That's the Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice debate tonight at 7 here on the Ideas Network. You can also watch it on Wisconsin Public Television. This race for state Supreme Court justice is really heating up. I had both candidates on the program yesterday, where Justice Prosser and Assistant Attorney General Joanne Kloppenburg traded some pretty heated jabs. Here's Justice Prosser first.
The candidate who's running against me is very far to the left. She hates Scott Walker. She hates his administration. She is virtually committing herself through the way the campaign is being conducted and through what associates of hers are saying to oppose any legislation that comes out of the Walker administration.
And Joanne Kloppenburg responded to that with this.
I have never said that I hate Scott Walker. He is the governor, and he has all the full powers of the executive to take this state in the direction that he believes it should go. And Justice Prosser has absolutely nothing to substantiate that charge.
Justice Prosser said, in part, his justification were postings on Ms. Kloppenburg's Facebook page that were anti-Governor Walker. Louis Fortas, what do you make of this race?
I know Dave Prosser. I served with Dave Prosser in the state legislature. He's a very decent fellow in many ways, but he's become a total disappointment as a justice. His campaign put out, he said that he was going to be a compliment to the Walker administration and the Republican legislature, which is exactly what a justice shouldn't be saying, because we have separation of powers, and he should be a check and a balance on it, not a lapdog or a rubber stamp. And so what he is now doing is he's turning this around in the Karl Rove approach and blaming her for not what her campaign has said or not what she has said, but what somebody posted on her in response to something that was said. Now, these postings are probably done by Prosser's people to kind of set her up or whatever, so Prosser then can be attacking her. I mean, it really is kind of disgraceful. And the thing about what Dave Prosser has done is he has become totally a partisan. You know, you don't spend 18 years in the legislature as a partisan and be a leader. He was speaker, he was minority leader, and then, quote, become an impartial justice. I mean, he is, totally biased, and that's what makes it unfortunate, is because, again, personally, David's a very nice fellow, but he should stay a legislator and not be a justice. I think if you look at Kloppenburg, and I do not know her personally, but she's worked in the Justice Department. She's worked for Democratic AGs. She's worked for Republican AGs, and she's apparently done very well on working for either one. This is the type of person I want to see as a justice, because if I go to court, all I'm looking for is a fair chance to have my day in court. I don't want to enter the courtroom knowing that, this judge is a justice, is a Republican, and this one's a day. I want my fair day in court.
Your analysis of the race, John Sharpless?
Well, this is fascinating, because I'm sure that if you'd talked to Prosser a year ago, he would have thought this was going to be a very smooth process. His campaign really has, I think, stumbled with the controversy surrounding Walker. And I think somewhat unfortunately, not in most of his advertising, but in some of it, he has linked himself back to the Republican Party. Running for justice is a kind of funny system in our state. People are not allowed to be partisan, but obviously the parties have the networks you need to raise money, to find audiences. So it really comes down to picking one or the other and moving through those circles while at the same time saying I'm nonpartisan. So if you lean toward the conservative side, you end up showing up at the Republican county meetings, because that's where you're going to find sympathetic people. But you always stress that you're nonpartisan. I think, we're getting a call now for appointed judges. I suspect that's not going to solve this problem. Then they become the judges that the lawyers want. That's what happens with appointed judges. But as long as you have judges that are being elected at large by the population, partisan issues are going to show themselves in these campaigns. And right now, for better or for worse, Prosser has been tied directly to the Walker administration, and he's going to have to fight that battle. And I suspect he's losing some numbers. I think this race, if again, 6 months ago, this race was in the bag. And I'll bet you this comes down to a very close race, because this is the chance for the anti-Walker people to vent.
Yeah. We will. You can see more. You can be the judge tonight at 7 o'clock. The We the People Wisconsin State Supreme Court Justice debate from 7 until 8 tonight. We'll follow up on the race and have more information on what happened at the debate Monday morning on the State Capitol Report between 7 and 8 o'clock. Let's talk now about the State Appeals Court sending this case involving Wisconsin's new collective bargaining law directly to the state Supreme Court. This is not on the policy. It's on the process that was used to pass the law, with critics saying that the legislature violated the state's open meetings law and didn't give enough notice as to what they were going to pass. So now it looks like the state Supreme Court will decide whether that was the proper process or not. John Sharpless, what do you make of that?
I'm sure. one more time, I'm sure Prosser hates this moment because he's going to have to take a stand on this, isn't he? We'll see how quickly they resolve this request. They clearly have a time horizon here. Doug La Follette has said that he's not going to publish the law until it's been resolved. That's just a little technicality. The state constitution says that it's when the law is actually published that it becomes manifest. It's already been signed by Walker. While all of this might give hope to the anti-Walker people, I think it's largely legal ritual because certainly if there's a setback in the courts on the technical issue of open records, they can go back to the floor and pass this again. I mean,
yeah, well, why don't they?
That's a very interesting question, and I know it's being debated about why, what's their strategy here. Maybe at this point they see nothing in it. If you could still win in court, that would be a validation. That would be an additional validation. Why not wait and see if you're validated in court? And if you're not, you bring it up on the floor again, you whisk it through the legislature, and the governor signs it. I don't think the Democrats are running off to Illinois again. So it's kind of, we might win, but of course we're going to win. You know, we might win in the courts, and that would make us feel good, and we could gloat. But we're going to win anyway, because even if we don't win in the courts, we'll just run it back through the state house and we'll be where we want to be. I suspect they would like to move on. They've got larger budget issues here that they have to confront that are going to be very unpopular. So they still have some battles to be fought between now and July.
Mm-hmm. Louis Fortas?
Yeah, I sit back and I marvel at how incompetent the majority has been handling this in the legislature. When you have the votes, then you just kind of sit back, you let the other side go on, and then you, in a systematic way, you then have the vote and you win. I mean, it's that simple. And instead, they were going through these kind of bullying tactics, and I just don't get it. When you have the vote, you don't need to do that. And so the question is, why don't they just do a simple revote? And I talked to a lot of people about this, and I've tried to figure it out myself, and one argument is that after seeing what the reaction to this legislation, that a lot of legislators who are in marginal districts and even not so marginal districts are frightened to death, a lot of Republicans, to take this vote again. So they don't want to take the vote again. They want to just put it behind them. They want to move forward. You think Jeff Stone, who's running for county exec in Milwaukee County, wants to go back and vote again on taking collective bargaining rights away and gutting a lot of different programs? Absolutely not. I mean, this guy is, you know, saying, trying to dance around this as much as he can. He has no desire to do that. So I think they would love to put it behind them, and I think it's going to be an interesting situation for Dave Prosser. And I'm almost, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Dave Prosser actually voted against Walker on this, just to try in his final days to show, you know, I'm really independent, I can do whatever. So I don't know what's going on, and I think Dave Prosser is frightened to death that this is going to come back to the state Supreme Court. As much as he's saying, you know, I don't know what I'll do, he is, you know, from what I know of people that are talking to Dave, he's frightened to death.
Another legal issue in the news, just yesterday, a court of appeals upheld Milwaukee's sick pay ordinance. And we just talked to a guest who was celebrating that, but the state legislature is working on negating it again. Louis Fortas, is this the sick pay ordinance in Milwaukee, which has been on hold for 2 years, which requires private sector businesses to pay or offer sick leave to their employees, is this a big deal?
Well, it's a big deal to some, and it's certainly a big deal to the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. And, you know, and of course they have to huff and puff because they have to impress their members so they can, you know, look like they're relevant. But I think a couple of things. I think I have a business in the city of Milwaukee, and we were essentially oblivious to this because we offer a lot more benefits than this is a very minimal minimal thing, and it's actually it's good business. If somebody is ill, you don't want them coming to work making everyone else ill if it's contagious. I think it's actually a decent policy. The problem is it should be broader than just the city of Milwaukee, and that's where I see I think the mayor and other people are rightfully concerned that, you know, is it going to, you know, our business is going to, you know, move two blocks over into a suburb or whatever, and that's a concern. But the more important thing is the hypocrisy on the part of some of the conservatives who talk about local control and you know, we want to keep it, you know, let the local people make the decision, not big government, not whatever. And when they don't like what the people do at the local level, whether it's, you know, local gun control ordinances, whether it's local cigarette, banning cigarettes in restaurants ordinances, whether it's, the chemical lawn ordinances, what do? They run to the state and get a preemption to knock out the local ordinances, and that's what they're probably going to do here. Is that Walker and company will, with the Fitzgerald brothers, do some kind of preemption to prevent local units of government from enacting things like this? That's what I think will happen.
Do you want a quick reaction, John Sharpless?
I think for people like Walker, this is more symbolic than real. It's very clearly a fairly mild law. But for conservative Republicans, they see it as another interference with particularly small businesses and the management of only a few employees. So it's a symbolic fight. Let me defend conservatives here on local control. Liberals do the same thing. Whenever they don't get their way at one level, they shift the level of combat. So if they don't get what they want at the state level, they run into Madison and pass the law, or they run into Milwaukee and pass the law. If they don't win at those levels, they run to the state. We play a lot of games with local control versus state enactment, and I don't think either party has is any more hypocritical on this issue.
I beg to differ, John, because the Democrats don't run around talking about local control like the Republicans and the conservatives do. They're always saying, you know, big government this, big government that. The liberals, historically have embraced big government because it was big government that forced some of these southern states to integrate schools and things like that. So big government has never been an enemy to the liberals. They're not the ones running around talking about states' rights and local control. The Republicans do. So the hypocrisy is not with the liberals, John. It's with the conservatives.
We're going to give Lewis the last word on that issue. We're going to talk about big government health care coming up in just a moment. As we continue the Week in Review with Lewis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, and John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for our Week in Review quiz. On Wednesday, screen legend Elizabeth Taylor died in Los Angeles of congestive heart failure at the age of 79. If you were listening to our 6 o'clock hour, you should know the answer to this week's quiz question. In which Wisconsin city did Elizabeth Taylor spend many summers as a teenager? If you think you know, call 1-800-642-1234. We will give you 5 minutes to call in your guesses. We will pick a winner from all of the correct answers and announce the winner at the end of the program. And the winner will be entitled to one of the many books that we featured on the program this week. All right, so that's the quiz question. Good luck to you. Let's talk a little bit about healthcare. It's the 1 year anniversary of the National Healthcare Reform Law. I'm looking at a headline here that says healthcare law's condition is anything but stable on its 1 year anniversary. Is that about right, John Sharpless?
Well, clearly the public has very divided feelings on this. The opposition to the bill has declined. There's a slight lead for the opponents right now in the national polling. I'm not sure that's relevant. If you're a Republican and you hate the bill, you like to cite the fact that most of the people in America, I think it's around 58-59%, share your beliefs. It's really hard to judge this bill. As I read through some of the recent articles on the bill, I was struck that Democrats in general still talk about the future. They don't talk about the present. Here's some problems right now. We're a year into this. Healthcare costs are going up very rapidly at the same rate as before the bill. We actually have had an increase in the uninsured, although they claim that the bill did away with such a thing. We've actually had increases in the uninsured. The bill encouraged massive consolidation in the healthcare vendor industry to a point where it's really quite frightening. The bill had incentives for healthcare vendors to combine into larger and larger corporations. And so now we're facing mega vendors that cross state lines, very powerful, and are potentially indifferent to the needs of the people who rely on them. And then finally, a lot of the bill, see, the problem with this bill, it was just a hodgepodge. And I know why the Democrats did that. They had a lot of constituencies to satisfy. But one of the ways they paid for it was simply to move a lot of people onto Medicaid. And then they passed the bill on to the states. And right now, states are in horrible financial condition. And the additional Medicaid burden is challenging both Democrat and Republican governors. This is not simply a Walker thing. This all across the country, governors are saying we can't afford the additional Medicaid burden that the bill requires. Now, if you said this to Pelosi right now, she would say, well, you haven't seen this unfold. This is going to unfold over the next 10 years, and many of these issues will be resolved. But I think the first year is questionable on this.
What do you think, Louis Fortas?
I'll agree with about two-thirds of what John said. And first of all, there isn't really a good cost control mechanism in this because, and it isn't that the Democrats put this together to try to, you know, satisfy a bunch of constituents. Yes, that's part of it, but the bigger part was the other side is that the Republican constituent groups were able to, you know, through things like Fox News and that, really put together a strong campaign against this in terms of death panels and all kind of crazy things that, still today, when you do polling, a lot of people think that these things like death panels are still in the bill and that they ever existed in the bill. So that's one problem. John is talking about the fact that there's more people uninsured today. Well, we went through like the worst recession since the Great Depression. And that's the main reason there's an increase in the uninsured. And also, the insurance companies are taking advantage of this moment where they're saying, we don't know what's going to happen, so we're going to keep raising our rates as we've been doing before. And the Democrats did try to put a lot of people on Medicaid, which would have been, I think, a very good policy because Medicaid runs, contrary to what a lot of Republicans say, it's very efficiently administered. I think it would work out very well. But it was Joe Lieberman and the Republicans that prevented that. So the good thing about the bill is that despite the fact it's being phased in and it won't really go into effect till 2014, there's a lot of things that have already kicked in.
Okay. I need to jump in because we have a number of state issues that I want to at least get a quick hit from each of you on. There are four Republican lawmakers making news this week, two in leadership positions, who are criticizing Governor Walker's proposal to eliminate the recycling mandate, the requirement that local governments run recycling programs. Does that mean that particular proposal is in big trouble, John Sharpless?
Well, this, like so many things in politics, there's a lot of hot air here and not enough substance. It turns out that the recycling law has a host of ways for local authorities to get out of recycling. My daughter was an undergraduate in La Crosse, and she used to bring her recyclables over to Madison.
Really?
Because they don't have an effective recycling program. They argue that they're trying to implement one. If you go around the state, there's very, very mixed response to the current legislation. I don't know if that's an excuse to do away with it. But I really think that the notion that suddenly, after this is revised, we're going to find beer cans in the street is simply not going to happen. The areas that like recycling, like Madison, are going to go on recycling. The areas that are suspicious about it will, and they probably think of ways right now to avoid it, they'll continue to avoid it.
Yeah. Do you agree, Lewis, or do you think this proposal's in trouble?
I think that the point that people are missing is that the business community desperately wanted this recycling bill. I was up there when this was passed in around 1990, and the problem is the landfills. We were filling landfills too quickly. They're extraordinarily expensive to put together. And they were trying to say, wait a second, there's a lot of things we can keep from getting into these landfills, and they will preserve the life of or extend the life of the landfills. So the business community was very strongly behind it in many parts of the state. So I'm not surprised to see Mike Ellis, who is a pretty independently thinking Republican. Rob Coles has always been a very strong environmentalist on the Republican side of the aisle. And so, no, I'm not surprised at all, because I think these guys are independent. They're people who are very experienced up there, and they understood the history.
Well, you're both a University of Wisconsin. Lewis, you're not. But let's talk a little bit, very briefly, about this University of Wisconsin system plan. Almost every UW chancellor has signed onto a proposal that would give each campus more flexibility, but would keep UW-Madison within the system. This proposal was sent to state legislators on Wednesday. Is this a good idea, John Sharpless?
I'm on the spot here.
Yeah, that's right. You're a University of Wisconsin faculty member.
I'm a Madison campus faculty member. We're all under a great deal of pressure to be 100% behind the chancellor's plan to secede from the system. I'm not as strong a supporter of the chancellor's plan as many of my colleagues. I've yet to understand. She talks about cost savings, greater control, but I'm not sure really where those come from. I'm not sure. It turns out, since we have a former legislator here, we really haven't fought a lot of real battles with the legislature in terms of management. Most of our battles is with the regents.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what's going on here. I think she's a great chancellor, and I hesitate to say anything bad about her, but I'm not strongly in support of her plan. I like Wisconsin's system as it is.
Yeah, I think we seriously, 30 seconds, Lewis Fortas, for your thoughts.
I think the plan that they have of a little more autonomy is a fine idea. I think that the Board of Regents, I cannot understand where they haven't fired Biddy Martin, the chancellor. I mean, she's going against them. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they hired her, and she's saying, if you don't do this, I'm going to oppose this. I mean, my God, that's insubordination. I mean, I'm just shocked that they don't have the guts to follow through on what they want.
We will have to leave it on that note. I'm sure we will do more on this issue in the days and weeks to come. Thank you very much, Lewis Fortas, for being with us.
Thank you, Joy, and thanks, John.
And thanks to John Sharpless as well.
Thank you very much. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, let me also announce that Lynn in Milton is the winner of our quiz question this week. She knew correctly that Elizabeth Taylor, spent her summers as a teenager in Minocqua. Taylor's uncle, Howard Young, reportedly was an art dealer who lived on Lake Minocqua, so she would come and visit him. So Elizabeth Taylor dying this week at the age of 79. Thanks very much to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you will listen tonight to the We the People Wisconsin State Supreme Court debate at 7 o'clock and then join us Monday for our State Capitol Report at 7 a.m. This is the Ideas Network.